Welcome to an extra special edition of ARG Presents. I am your good buddy, your good pal, your bosom companion, amigo Aaron, joined by the man who puts the X in COM X35. I give you the Brent.
I'm closer to putting the 35 into COM X35.
You wish. Flip that number around, pal. 53.
That's
you're
you,
almost as old as the Chud. Take off, eh? So, last week, Brent, for those that were not in attendance, we spun a certain wheel, and we made an incredible deal. It's a deal so incredible that we didn't know what it was or where it came from, but by God, we've learned. And we'll share our infinite knowledge this week as we take an exciting look at, bam, the COM X35, Britt. Now, Britt, I know you have spent the week in rigorous study. What can you tell the audience that you've learned this week about the COM X35?
Well, the COM X35, its name definitely begins with a C, and 35 is a number.
Typical. As dumb as he is stupid, ladies and gentlemen, don't worry. Your good pal, Amigo Aaron, has done rigorous research on the topic of the COM X35, and I'll share with you now. Let's talk about the COM X, Brent. This is an interesting machine.
Slick-looking machine.
Sure it is.
Slick-looking machine.
So, this thing came from the depths of Hong Kong, Brent, and really, there's sort of a hazy past. There's not a whole lot known about the COM X in terms of what led up to it. Manufactured by the COM X World Operations Limited out of Hong Kong. This machine debuted in 1983, the Brent.
Yes.
This ran on an RCA CDP 1802A CPU. Very renowned. I'll get into that in a minute. It actually sort of is. This thing ran at a blazing 2.8 megahertz, the Brent. This thing came with 35K of RAM, 32K was usable, and 16K of ROM. You had 3K of that. It was video RAM. This had no graphics modes, but you can use characters as graphics. It had one channel synthesizer, 8 octaves and 16-step sound. Enough of that. Let's get to the main event here. What did this thing cost and what did it do? Well, when this debuted in the UK, at least, in June of 83, you could pick one of these bad boys up for £130. In today's wad,
that's kind of up there.
That's 400 US bucks. That's not that bad if you consider the Spectrum was debuting around 99. What are we going to get into here with the COM X? So, for starters, this thing sold mostly in Europe, and it had its greatest success, get this, the Brent, in the Netherlands.
Yeah,
who knows why? You know, I don't know why, but that's
where they
embraced it. And they went to work. And the funny thing about the COM X library is there was very few commercial pieces of software released for it. Almost everything made for this thing was basically copyright free or the result
stuff,
of contests, you know, which is strange. I found a note here that mentioned that West Electronics hosted several homemade software competitions, resulting in the fact that most of the software found today for the COM X35 is in Dutch. So that's kind of interesting. You do have that speaker that makes a beep. If you hit a key, you can get a beep out of it. Get this, the Brent. You're looking at the keyboard and it's got those rubber kind of keys. It's sort of not a real keyboard. It sort of is. Allegedly, and I saw this, I saw chatters that said this is a fact. This is true. The keyboard was waterproof, for what that's worth. So you could literally dump a pop or something on there, take it out, like wash it, put it back in, good to go. So now listen to this. That 8-bit processor I mentioned, the RCA CPD 1802, this was a surprise to me because I thought to myself, I don't know much about that processor. It actually is still being manufactured as it's radiation resistant. It was used in the Viking, the Voyager, and the Galileo probes. That's kind of cool. The COM X35 case, for those that are watching at home, you can tell. If you're not watching, you can't. It's a black case, but apparently there's a very rare white case, so like rhinos.
Ooh.
You may see the white case somewhere down the line. There was a sequel to this. It was actually called the COM X PC-1 or the Savia PC-1, which is a much more conventional looking machine, isn't the Brent?
Yes,
than what we've been seeing.
Yeah, that's I don't like that nearly as much.
Let's talk about one of the wacky things about this thing. It's got a built-in joystick, the
that's
print.
That's it.
Now, the joystick apparently just acts like arrow keys. Not the worst idea, if I'm honest.
Sort of. That is the worst idea, but I salute them for it.
Now, this thing came with something called Quest Super Basic, or the basic on them was based on it. Had some problems, and I looked up some of the wacky. There was a couple wacky bugs. My favorite. If you're typing a program in on the Comex, if you get to line 65535, unfortunately, it will hang the unit. Whoops. So if you've gotten that far into your program, you got yourselves a problem, the Brent. No good. This thing did have peripherals. I was surprised. It had one of those expansion boxes a la the TI. Floppy disk, a printer. RAM. It had a RAM expansion that would double the RAM. The problem with the RAM is after you doubled it, BASIC still didn't detect it.
Yeah. So I'm not sure. Yeah, the RAM expansion, I don't think.
Yeah.
Not well implemented.
Well, I mean, what are you going to do? This thing ran was on a CPU, and this also was used in one of the things we looked at a while back, the RCA Studio 2 video game system. I think we've looked at maybe two machines that had this chip in it. It's not something you see often, and it's kind of low power. Now, I looked up, believe it or not, the Brent. You know, we're not going to find any reviews of our games this week in magazines, but I did find reviews of the comics itself. And I wanted to get into. So this is a review from a magazine called Your Computer Magazine, August 1983, by Kathleen Peel. And her conclusions on the Comex 35, she said, the Comex 35 cannot be recommended for business as it lacks speed and a suitable keyboard. If an adequate library of high-quality machine code arcade games can be assembled, then the Comex 35 could be treated as a game machine with computing capabilities, where the integration of the joystick with the keyboard will make for a more realistic arcade-style presentation than a normal keyboard. I dispute that. the demonstration tape...
Now, Aaron, real quick. It said a presentation of one, right. Not in function.
Yeah. It says, for a 1983 computer, it has extremely slow version of BASIC and uses an outmoded CPU, which is unknown in today's most popular micros. Keep in mind, this is from 83. It has an incomplete version of BASIC, and some commands have non-standard meanings. That's true. Error codes need to be more explicit about the nature of the error. So this thing had some problems, and also she didn't like the fact that it had a non-standard keyboard. That's surprising to me. Now, I also found another review. This is from a New Zealand magazine called Computer Input, December of 83. This is a quickie. It just says, in conclusion, one thing that might detract from the popularity of the Comex 35 is its CPU. The 180R is, in the realms of modern home computing, a veritable dinosaur. This poses the problems of software. I doubt there are many 180R programmers still around. This is an 83, mind you. However, if Comex can achieve a good amount of software, this should be a good little machine, although a lot would depend on the price, the Comex. At the right price, the machine could be popular. Now, some people remember this machine quite fondly, the Brent, to be honest with you. And one of the things that I noticed is that there's a modern remake of the Comex 35. It's called the Comex 35 with an I in there. You know, like, you know, it's old. Remember when Penthouse or one of those magazines would put out those kind of X-rated comics? They'd call them Comics IX. Spelled the same way, unfortunately. This appeared in August of 2020. And I looked on eBay. You can get these things, these comics boards, right now. I saw one go up for $26. All you have to do is fire up an order to Slovakia and you're in. But these actually come up occasionally, and you'll see them. So that's kind of, I thought that was kind of neat. So let's talk about the games on this thing, the Brent. I don't know. Did you get a chance to go through and play any of these games?
Yeah, I played probably two dozen.
Okay, your thoughts?
Most of them are not good.
Well, that's a burial. Can you give me a little more?
I mean, all of them have. Some issue with, well, at least the ones I played had issue with screen draw, as in you had to draw the screen before it did anything. Anything that tried to be like a scrolling screen or have scrolling elements, bouncing balls, that sort of thing. It didn't do so good.
Well, it has no graphics.
I know. So it's
you're killing basically, it.
No. Let's put it this way. I spent the most time outside of our games playing a game where it would give you a sentence with a missing word, and you had to try to guess what the missing word was. It was so.
Listen, you're burying this machine, and this thing's got some good quality games. I would
no,
put this.
It does
hold
not
on,
have.
Hold on. I would put this somewhere above the Mattel Aquarius in graphical capability. SpongeBob has no graphics.
I think, no, it's on par with.
And I think the games are way better on this than they were on the Aquarius.
I don't agree.
I played a lot of games on this, including a lot from your guy. He made about 3,000
games. Well, that's
a whole
different thing we'll get into.
You know, and I thought there was some pretty decent stuff. I played this Donkey Kong we're looking at here. This is a direct arcade port, brother. It doesn't get any better than that. It's true, man. I thought they did a pretty good job. They've got Centipede in here. They've got all kinds of stuff. They've got all kinds. They've got Berserk clones.
Now
they've got Pac-Man clones.
One thing I will say, I did avoid the arcade clones. I tried to go for original stuff.
Well, I played them. I want to thank this guy, Olpix. I know I'm mispronouncing that. His singular efforts in preserving the Comex 35 are renowned because he put together this incredible games video of things that you can't find anywhere. And he also put together the video I showed earlier of the of him going through a Comex 35. So I'm assuming he captured himself up his own Comex.
Sure.
Now, I should mention this. Speaking, just in case you wanted to go out and try these games, you got two methods, and one of them is a very good emulation package that comes with all these games, and I will link it in the show notes. And I want to thank, I believe it was Pajaco that turned us on to that stuff. The brand,
absolutely, yes.
I also should say that you can buy a Comex 35, Brent. What do you think these are going for right now? I found two of them for sale. One in the U.S. You would take a guess.
I can't imagine it'd be over, say, $150.
Your imagination is limited by your own stupidity because you're bad-mouthing this machine. First of all, if you're in the U.S. of A, like we are, you can buy one of these bad boys right now. Have it delivered to your house for $450. Takes it to the house. It's a known working model. If you are overseas or want to try your luck, you can pay $461 or best offer and have one of these things shipped in Italy. If these things were cheaper, I'd buy one instantly, Brent. These things are neat. I think they're really cool looking.
They are neat, but there are better options that do this level of computing.
Like what?
I mean, this, I would much rather have a Spectrum.
Well, I mean,
for example.
Listen, but I mean, the Spectrum was more advanced than this. By a long shot.
Well, the Z80 is the huge, the processor.
Zed, brother, Zed.
Yes,
you just killed. By the way, I almost picked this game, Magic Carpet. This looks pretty cool. There's a lot of these Manic Miner style games on here with a twist, which I like. So, if you're interested, pick this
up. We'll get into that, too.
But I will say this. I sincerely think that if you get a chance, you should go and grab the simulation package. Just go through these. I had a lot more fun than you did, apparently, because I had more time than you this week. Brent's been out of the gun. Not me.
No, I mean,
I got time to kill, and I've been playing a lot of the old comics. I thought
like
some of these
I said,
really
I played about two dozen games, okay? Yeah. I did say, I tried Burger Time. I couldn't get Burger Time to load. It failed on me.
Two different loading methods, my friend. I can show you how to do it.
Well, I'm sure, yeah. But I purposely avoided arcade clones because I wanted to see the original stuff that was out there. Which equates to a lot of Pong, a lot of Breakout, a lot of what the game you brought to the table.
Yeah. Listen, but, there's a lot of good stuff on here. I'm going to dispute you on this.
Okay.
I think there's a lot of good stuff.
Before we go on, uh-huh. I'm not saying this stuff is bad, right? I understand where we're coming from, but what I experienced was not the best fun that could be had with an old style computer.
Listen, you're too grumpy. That's your problem.
All right.
So, with all we'll that grumpy, well, like Grumpy said, the Brent, we did spin the wheel. We made the deal. Comics came up great. And now it's time to go into the games we picked. I'm going to lead the dance because I'm so excited, Brent. I just can't hide it. Because when you got a game with a name like mine, you got to get into it, brother. It's Bam. Get your gadget. Get your gadget. What a name. What a name for a game. Now, this may stun and surprise many, but when investigating and looking at any of these games, there is not a lot to find, unfortunately, because for the most part, they weren't sold. Now, I did read a couple forum quotes where people had talked about buying a game for the COMEX 35. So there apparently there were at least a couple that were sold, but neither of the games that we picked were for sale as far as I know. And I know mine was not. But let's get into it here, the Brent, with what I've managed to dig up. And I told Brent before the show, I may have stumbled from the realm of research into the disturbing realm of cyber stalking as I was trying to investigate these guys. But I did learn some stuff. So, this game, Get Your Gadget, released. That's good advice, by the way. Released in 1984, Brent. So just a year after this thing had came out. The company is listed as Junior by everywhere, but I don't think they paid a whole lot of attention. If you look on the title screen, it does say that. But if you look, the name of the two fellows that did this are start with J and R. So it could be JR. I don't necessarily think it's called Junior. But it is what it is. This is a game that came on tape for one player. And the two fellows that put this together were named Jerome Griffion and Robert Nix. Robert cunningly spelled with two B's. By the way, that's the way he spells it, because I saw a lot of people that just didn't have it right. This is a 2D helicopter shoot 'em up. Sort of puzzle game. We'll get into it.
Far more puzzle game.
We'll get into it. And I did look into these guys, and apparently they are both from the Netherlands. As far as I could tell, Robert Nix either works at or has worked at the University of Utrecht.
That's okay. I'll be butchering names later. So go ahead and get it out of your system.
I'm not good at that, but still, I like the fact that I looked into this. And this guy is actually quite a character. So let's get into the game proper, Brent. Enough of that preliminary garbage. What are we doing here? Get Your Gadget. Get Your Gadget is a pretty neat game, and it actually takes advantage of the limitations of the comics in kind of an interesting way. So what do you do when you've got a game like this where you're basically controlling this thing with the number pads? You would think to yourself, what a huge disadvantage to just use the joystick, which is basically the up, down, left, right, to play an action game. And you're right, but if you cunningly make your game, you could turn that negative into a positive. And that's exactly what these two fellows did. Because as this chopper moves, let's face facts, you don't have to do anything to keep the chopper in the air. There's no artificial gravity, any of that crap. That's for suckers. All you have to do is move this chopper up, down, left, right. Now, and shoot. Now, you've got a cunning bit in this, sort of like a choplifter. When you turn the copter left and right, there's a frame in between left and right where the copter is facing straight on, okay?
Yep.
At that point, the copter's profile becomes smaller, understand? And it allows you to slip the chopper in through little nooks and crannies, and also it lets you fire straight down as opposed to left and right. This is vital to Brent, because the world of Get Your Gadget is a dangerous, dangerous place. Yeah. This game,
they don't want you to get your gadget, that's for sure. Yeah.
This game is the answer to the question, what if Bruce Lee was played from a chopper, and instead of having the green Yamo and the ninja chase you, you're chased by fleets and fleets of killer guns. That's what you've got here. Your object is to go through the game world of Get Your Gadget and capture all the gadgets. What's a gadget? Don't know. What do they look like? They look like sort of yellow diamonds. And you have to go through and get all these. Sounds simple, right? Well, it's not. Because throughout the world are many, many, many killer things that will try to gun you down. Amongst the things you've got is that you've got, of course, guns. You've got guns everywhere. You've got stuff shooting all over the place. You've also got UFOs that strategically appear for some reason. They're all over the place. And then what you've really got to worry about, I mean, that stuff's all bad, but the terrain in this world is god-awful. It hates you and everyone you've ever loved. It is difficult to circumnavigate going through this game. You'll have to blow through walls and kind of stuff your helicopter into the tiniest little areas. You also have areas that are blocked off by a wall, and then the last segment of the wall is a key. And the only way to get around these areas is to go and shoot the key, and then that wall will disintegrate. Sounds easy, except they've cunningly placed these in areas that make them difficult to get to. And when you get to them and that chain breaks, it also frees up that area to be shot through by the many, many guns, because that provided a barrier for those guns. So there's a lot going on in this game. I'm not 100% sure how many screens it's got. I know it's got at least 10 different screens. It's a flip screen game. So yeah. To summarize what this is a action puzzler flip screen shoot 'em up. Let's go with that. Somewhere boat smiling, because that's a lot to get into. I will say the graphics in this are nice. The terrain is green. There's yellows. There's little buildings. There's walls. The UFOs look good. They move. The UFOs have some kind of brilliance to them because they're incredibly difficult to shoot. Did you have any trouble shooting these things like I did? I mean, they avoid your fire like you wouldn't believe.
Well, I do believe they just fly randomly, but
no,
they fly randomly
no.
in a bad way.
No, they don't fly randomly. They do fly randomly, but when you start shooting, they avoid your shots. I'm going to tell you that right now. The funny thing about the UFOs is occasionally they'll just basically ram into the wall. Or they'll also occasionally get shot by not
you. Yeah, they'll get hit by friendly fire.
Yeah. Everything in this game is cunningly positioned to make it a challenge. So what would you, I mean, I compared this to Bruce Lee, but really it's more like something like a Manic Mind or something in the air. I mean, you basically have to plan your strategy on each board to get through. Now, when you get killed, you start with 9 lives. You're thinking to yourself, well, heck, that's dandy. Well, that's not nearly enough. You need hundreds of lives to get through this. When you start the game with 9 lives, you go through it. All the gadgets you get, you keep. However, if you're getting a pack of 4 gadgets out of this area that's locked off, for example, when you die, you'll come back. And the problem is the gadgets you got, you'll still have those, but you've got to start all over. So everything you've shot, it all comes back. All the keyed walls, the whole
everything,
nine yards.
Yeah, the board resets every time.
Right, and that sucks. The UFOs also will respawn. So once you knock them out, they're going to go back. You can shoot some of the guns. Some stuff you can't shoot. But it's a deadly, deadly game, including there's one great board where basically there's a message written in the side of it, basically like, you're screwed. So yeah. I can't recall what it was. Something more poetic than that. A fun game, Brett. I've got some interesting tidbits about this, but before we get to them, what did you think of this one?
Too hard.
Well, can you give us more?
No. I mean, the game is so difficult and requires precision flying. Like, when you go from facing left to facing right, your ship when you have that middle frame can be in either column A or column B. And column A and B are right next to each other, but it's the width of your helicopter. So there are times when you have to wiggle, because when you're facing forward, you can't strafe.
Yeah.
It's just an intermediate between turning. So there are times when you need to go down and you have to shift between that column A and column B, which means you have to either go from left to right or right to left, and that would change what column you're in. And that type of precision is what the game is all about. And if you're not in the mood for that, or you don't have the wherewithal to remember that kind of thing, the game is incredibly frustrating. It is incredibly difficult, too. I mean, even taking that kind of movement off the table, just the amount of stuff being fired, being littered around the board, the fact that every time you die, the board resets. So you can get all the way to the end of a screen, and on your way out, your tail clips the side.
Yeah.
Well, you got to basically do the whole thing again. And it's not that the fact that you have to recollect the gadgets, because that's not the thing. It's just going through all of the detail and setup work. Some of these screens can take like 7 or 8 minutes to do correctly. And for me, I gave this a huge chance, And I tried to focus on boards to clear the boards. Now you can go from one board to another, just kind of fly around, look around. You can get to
you can explore.
Yeah, you can get to like 8 or 9 screens that way before it gets so difficult you can't even transfer to the next screen. But I tried to focus on boards, figure out all the patterns, figure out all the things, and the controls are just fiddly enough that it's not fun to try to figure out, at least for me, it's not fun to try to figure out what the game wants you to do, because you're kind of fighting the controls a little too much.
I disagree. I don't wholeheartedly disagree. I'm going to tell you why. There's no time limit in this game.
There's no time limit.
You move your helicopter. Pretend that's just a guy on the screen. It's not even a helicopter. It's a little man.
It's a really fat guy. Yes.
He moves just like one cursor spot at a time. So you don't have to be in a hurry. You can take your time.
No, he doesn't just move one cursor space at a time.
If you're facing left or right, he does. Now, I know what you mean about skipping along, because it's movement in this, when you go to that forward view, it does get a little weird. Your movement, you'll get like an extra hop.
Yeah.
But I mean, once you understand how it works, and if you take your look at your little crosshair on your keyboard and just, where do I need to get to go through here? Most places require some timing, but a lot of the times you get killed. This is because you're hitting terrain. And that's because at every place that's in here, there's a way to it. You have to be very cunning to get to it. Okay.
Well, no, I 100% agree with what you're saying.
Yeah.
But I feel that the controls, not as in like you hit left and there's a delay. I mean the whole movement of the copter, the way the left and right works, even the way the up and down works, having to account for all of your sprite, that kind of stuff, it gets tedious.
There are no sprites. Remember that.
Well, you know what I mean. So if you want something where you can sit down and spend 5, 6, 7 minutes per screen, go through this, and you're not going to get frustrated, it's really good.
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of elements, puzzle-type elements to it, that will keep you trying to figure out what to do next.
I'm telling you, this is a game, and as far as I can tell, this is the only platform it was ever released on. This is a game for the manic miner crowd. This is a game for those Spectrum owners that are like to be punished, repeatedly punished for their insolence to even attempt to play a game such as this. That's what I like about it. And the fact that you don't have to hurry. I mean, there are areas where you have to go quick because there are guns going off. But a lot of times you can reason your way through. You know, I'm a cerebral player. I ponder. I consider these things. I'm not just some crazy random shooting crazy maniac like you are. I like to use my mind, my wits, the Brent. And this appealed to me on that level. Now, I will say, when I was searching for games to play, I watched a video from the same fellow I mentioned earlier who did the great video on the showing off the comics. And he went through a million games. And this game stuck out. I thought to myself, this must be the game.
This is the highlight of the comics.
It turns
I will
out,
agree
yeah,
to that.
It turns out this is considered the top game on the comics, which makes this all the more hilarious until I get to this part of the game. So I searched. I went to the Wayback Machine. I literally went through old file cabinets. I went through everything I could to find some stuff on the guys that made this game. And in fact, I found both of them had posted on this comic site in 2012. And so, one thing I want to mention to set this up is this game actually has good sound. I mean, it sounds like a helicopter. It sounds like bullet shooting. And when you die, there's this hideous noise, the Brent, that plays. Did you hear this hideous noise?
Yeah.
Okay, do you know what the hideous noise was?
Yeah.
You do.
Yeah, the text-to-speech.
Well, no, that's not what it was. But yeah, it is speech. It's not text. Believe it or not.
Well, yeah, yeah, that's what I mean. But that's sort of what it sounds like.
So these two guys digitized a 1-bit digital audio quality sample. Okay, when you die, it screams out, "Oh crap!" But it don't say crap.
Yeah,
we gotta keep this G rating.
Is the PG way of saying it.
OS**. So this, believe it or not, this game, as incredible as it is, it's got all these advantages. It also has digitized sound. Digitized sound. It does. I read this straight from the author.
No, I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just saying you're not going to use this for your next audiobook.
And by the way, just in case you're wondering, according to what I've read here, that was Jerome saying the words. They're in the game. Now get this, one last thing to close out on here. There are 127 gadgets in the game. And I saw a lot of people asking the authors, "Hey, wait a minute. This game, I couldn't figure out what to do." Well, they never finished the game. So Robert Nix said, once you had all 27 gadgets, you couldn't continue. We simply didn't take into account that someone would make it. So, and he also mentioned that once they had set out to create an editor so other people could design their own Get Your Gadget levels, but it didn't happen. So there you go. So, but still, if you can get 127 of the gadgets in this game, you are a winner, my friend. I can tell you right, there's no loser, because that is no easy feat. That's for darn sure. You know, we did get some reviews on this bad boy, the Brent. If you'll indulge me here as I scroll up to get to them. So, to start off with, Pajaco 6502 writes, "This game is infuriating, but I freaking love it. It takes a little while to get used to, especially turning your helicopter in tight spaces." That's true. "At its core, it's really a puzzle game more than a shooter. It reminds me a little of Crazy Balloon, another game I'm a fan of. There is a glitch where dying on some screens will reset your position in somewhere else on the screen, which can be advantageous." Interesting. "Be careful, as you can seemingly fly into your own bullets, so hammering the fire button and flying ain't going to mix well." That should be like that in every game, in my opinion. "The only real letdown for this game is the flying enemies respawn, sometimes right on top of you." That I did notice. If you've never experienced the Comics 35 before, and you're wanting to check it out, this is one of the first games to play, especially the speech sample. He knew, too. It says, "Oh, shoot." And that's the family-friendly version, he says. 8 out of 10. Excellent work. We also had a review from our good buddy Z9K9. He's a gamer. He writes, "A game of logical maneuvering and sometimes dexterity. Crisp movement, a mixture of easy and tricky tasks, a Bond villain-like energy to the impractically convoluted underground caverns, and a nice homespun atmosphere with flavor text and the developer's logo shamelessly plastered therein. Repeatedly forgetting the hang time of explosion adds a certain je ne sais quoi to your flow, but I feel in a good humor. Thank goodness the chopper hovers by itself. 8 out of 10. Excellent work, gentlemen. I think you got a winner right here. Don't listen to the Brent. He's panning it, but he's not.
No, I'm not panning it. Brent, I'm just saying it's too hard, and the maneuvering is very frustrating.
Let me just say this. Brent is not as experienced as I am in the ways of the European game of this sort.
Well, Boat, we can't all be 60.
Boat hates these games too, but I like them. I like the pain. And this game will bring the pain in spades, the Brent.
I like hard games, but this one didn't do it for me.
Yeah, by the way, Z9, what a flourish. He missed his calling, my friend, as a brilliant writer, and Pajaco as a brilliant reviewer. So that was Get Your Gadget. Now, Brent, there is no conceivable way that a game that you picked can even come close to getting the gadget. But what have you got this week on the COM-X35?
Instead of looking at the old school software, I went for something that has been recently released for the COM-X35.
Oh, man. All right. What do you got?
And I chose Cross Horde.
What was that called again? Say it one more time.
Cross Horde.
Okay. Fair enough.
What? It so, is. It's crossword. Now, there's a lot of interesting things about this, but I want to go over the least interesting thing first, and that's the game.
Burial already?
No. Actually, I enjoyed playing this. I played this way, way more than I played your game. Crosshorde is a single screen shooter where you're shooting up the screen to protect your castle, your structure from incoming zombies. And you are a crossbow at the bottom of the screen, and you're shooting up the screen to the approaching horde, which is forever slowly moving in your direction. And it's stretched over 10 phases or levels, and each level gets progressively more difficult and more zombies to kill and more different zombies to kill.
Are they zombies?
And, yeah. Yeah, they're zombies.
Is that in the flavor text somewhere?
Yeah, why?
I mean, I never saw that. I just assumed, I didn't know what it was. I thought it was, it could be revolutionaries. Could
no,
be
no, they're they're zombies.
Okay.
So, when you first start out, level one, you are giving, you're up against white, a white shaded zombie, and all they do is lumber forward, endlessly lumbering forward.
They stole your gimmick.
Yeah, thanks. And every time you shoot them, they get pushed back a little bit. And this particular these particular zombies take 3 hits and then they're eliminated. And as you progress through the games, you get more different colored and different abilityed zombies. For example, the next zombies you go against are green, and they take 6 hits instead of 3. The zombies after that are yellow, and they will, once they start getting shot, they will take a defensive stance where you can't hurt them, and then you have to, you know, come back to them. After that are red zombies, or kind of a pinkish magenta zombie, where they will actually fire projectiles back at the player. And it keeps going on like this, and to make the game more exciting even still, you have power-ups in the game. The first 3 power-ups you collect will increase your range, which is how far you can fire up screen. The next 3 are how fast your projectile moves. The next 3 upgrades are to how many arrows you shoot at a time. And all the zombies are all in columns coming down the screen. So
well,
when
not
you start
really.
Out... Huh?
They're more like a big mob. I wouldn't say they're in columns.
No. They're in columns. There's 1 zombie per column.
Oh, I got you.
And there's
40
columns.
Yeah. Okay, I get you.
So your first arrow is just shoots 1 column. Then it gets upgraded to 2, upgraded to 3. But there's more upgrades. You can also pick up an icon that will build a outer perimeter wall in the middle of the screen, that when the zombies get to it, they hit it and they'll just stay there for a little while. There is a freeze bomb that will freeze the entire screen so the zombies don't move forward, and you can just kind of run around and blast in that way. And finally, there's a hyper mode where it resets all of your arrows to full and gives you a time to go in there with extra power and kill them that way. Also, you get 3 more power-ups and you get increased power, which means you do extra damage to the zombies. All of that is awesome. It's fun. It's a fun little game. It's a fun little distraction. My 2 biggest complaints with the game is you have limited ammo, and that's not a complaint because that actually makes the game kind of exciting. Whereas when you're fighting, you sometimes will run out of arrows, and you'll get 9 arrows every 3 or 4 seconds. Right, if you're out of arrows. But it can lead to very tense situations where a zombie is getting really close to hitting you or running into your structure, and you're waiting for your arrows to automatically reload, so you're sitting there hitting the button. You can pick up arrows as the game plays as an additional power-up, but when you run out of arrows, it will automatically replenish. The other factor is every time you beat a level, all of your power-ups go away. So you have to collect all the power-ups again.
Yeah, that sucked. I didn't
like that. Or if you die, if you get either a zombie makes it to your structure, or far more likely, you get zapped by one of the zombies that can shoot, everything resets. Now, the nice thing about that is it does reset the zombie's positioning to the middle of the screen again as well. But having to collect all those power-ups again every time is kind of a pain. Not being able to start on a stage besides stage one also sucks, because each stage takes like 6 or 7 minutes.
Yeah.
Because you have to kill so many zombies.
It's quite leisurely, this horde at the beginning.
They are. And it's not until the later levels, until the far later levels, that you actually get challenged. I mean, the stage one and two are perfect for introducing what the power-ups are doing, how there's different types of zombies, that sort of thing. But it's not until you get to levels like 4 or 5 or 6 that the zombies actually pose a threat. Now, this is actually a game that's sort of still in being worked on. I think the latest update was last year. It might have even been more recent than that. But I want to talk about the developer. And boy, I'm going to butcher this guy's name. I apologize in advance. It is Fabrizio Caruso.
That's pretty good. I think you got it. Fabrizio Caruso.
And this man, I do believe this is a single effort. Now, he has credited other people with helping him on his journey. But what makes this game incredibly interesting, what really is the standout, is this did not just get released on the COMEX. This has been released without actually coding for all these systems, 200 additional systems this game has been released on. And what he has done is he has developed a programming language that when you program for a game once, in using a C++ library, and boy, programming's not my thing, guys, so you have to excuse some of my ignorance on this. But he has a library called CrossLib. And when you program something in CrossLib, it makes it available for all these other platforms. And it is hugely extensive. I mean, it covers calculators. It covers old systems, middle range systems, modern systems, because it changes your program into something that processors, it's not programming for a system, it's programming for a processor. And anything that uses, a Z80 or the processor that the COMEX uses can get translated into a working game for these systems. Now, that doesn't mean everything's going to be pixel one for one. For example, you can play this on the MSX, and it's faster on the MSX. It has sound on the MSX, and there aren't as many columns of zombies because the screen doesn't go that wide on an MSX. So there are differences, but with this one programming language, you can write a program once and get all this coverage for all these systems. I think that is absolutely brilliant. And does it limit the things you can do in a game? Of course. Does it limit, can you make something as good in CrossLib as you could if you programmed just for the system that you're working on? Of course not. But it gives these systems that haven't probably had any love for decades, new software that they can run natively on their systems, and all you have to do is program it for this one thing and you get all this coverage. I think that is absolutely brilliant, and I think this is something that could, honestly, if people really grabbed onto this and it got more extensive with things you could do, I think this would be a perfect way to program for some of these older systems. I really think it's neat. himself, he's released, four or five games? Cross Shoot, Cross Bomber, Cross Snake, and Cross Horde. I think Cross Horde is probably his best work. I did check out the other things that were translated onto the Comex. I think Cross Horde is the most gamey of the whole set. But I think the technology is absolutely brilliant. The software side of things, which we never give much love onto this show because we're just not knowledgeable in it.
Too dumb.
But yeah, that's it. I think it's really neat. Aaron, before we talk about that, what did you think of the game itself?
You know, this is a game. Everything you said is dead on, all right? I started playing this. I'm like, this is crap. I'm not going to play this for very long. But I thought, well, I'll go ahead and clear out these zombies. So then the pink zombies came, or the horde. And I was like, well, what's the scoop on these guys? Well, they're tougher to kill. And then I started getting all the power-ups and stuff. I'm like, oh, wait a minute here. This is starting to get me. And you have to get well into it before it gets real challenging. They didn't reinvent the wheel here, but it's like what would happen if the Space Invaders just randomly came down. It's basically what it reminded me of. And you got a bunch of extra stuff. It's funny because as your ship starts out like a piece of garbage, but by the time you've got three arrows coming out and the speed's cranked up and you're knocking, it's cool. I wish it was faster, and I wish it would get faster quicker. Like you said, it'd be nice to have a level skip to say level 10, like right away. But it's fun if you've got the patience to play it. Now, is this better or on the same level as Get Your Gadget? And I mean, obviously not graphically, but I mean, the fun factor is there. It's certainly a different type of game that you could sit a kid in front of or something like that. I looked at some of the other versions of this for like the Vic and the C64 and the ZX. I mean, they look different, but they're the same type of game. It's cool that this is available in so many machines. I love that. What you said about his ability to do that, it is remarkable. I like the fact that, like I said, I like power-ups and stuff. I think this is a pretty good effort, and I'd say this is probably one of the better titles on the system that I played. Now, I wasn't there. I was surprised how many decent arcade ports there were on this that you didn't try. But, I mean, as a standalone game that is not an arcade port, I thought it was dandy. And it just needs to get fleshed out in terms of the speed and a level skip. And if they get that in there, because once this game gets a lot more frantic, frenetic once you get further into it. And that's what makes it a lot more fun.
Now, what did you think of the technology that you can program with this codex or this library for one language and then be available for so many systems?
To be honest with you, I didn't know about that. I just thought he released it for a lot of machines. I had no idea it was 1,000 machines or whatever. But I did see, it's funny, when I was looking for footage for this, and by the way, this is Brent playing this game. When I was looking for footage of this to put in the show, I couldn't find hardly any more. I had like 33 seconds of it. And so, but there were plenty of other footage from other systems of the game. So I knew it had been ported to a bunch of machines. I didn't realize the scope or the project the guy was endeavoring to do. And I'd say, like you mentioned, for a game that's ported to so many machines using some kind of cockamamie software, hey, it's good. This would be good on any machine you put it on. I mean, and there's a lot of machines that are begging for something like of this quality. You know, I mean, I'm looking at you, Aquarius. I'm looking at a couple of you dog systems. This would be right. This would be perfect. You know, we need a Pippin version, like straight away, for example. Get it at, make it happen. This would be fine. I mean, and the thing is, a game like this, you can play this on a ZX81. And it would be great. You can play this on Atari 2600. It'd be great. It's a good game. And if they, there's some elements of gameplay that I would change to make it faster and more quickly. But I mean, otherwise, it's a lot of fun. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, 100% agree. I thought this was a good time. Now we got some reviews on this as well.
Yeah, let me roll up here to them. So we did get several reviews on this one. The Brent, if you'll indulge me here, so. To start off, let's go with Z9K9, who writes, enabled by massively cross-platform game engine, the ports of this game differ not just in aesthetics, but adapt to their host machine in gameplay affecting ways, which leave balance somewhat to chance. For example, the VIC-20 version and it's low resolution, only has about 20 columns of enemies. The Spectrum game has about 30 columns, and this Comex version has about 40 columns. Unfortunately, the Comex also moves much slower than the other two, so traversing that expansive playfield back and forth is quite a journey. While given so much time to think and react, the game is quite easy. I beat the 10 levels with only losing one life through, and I was sleepy. Technically interesting, though, 5 out of 10. Again, that I think he said it, 10 levels, you got to move it up. I agree with him. We also got to look at this from Pajaco. He writes, on first load up, you think it's another Space Invaders clone, but it's a lot more intense than that. It actually reminds me a lot of Robotrotter Berserk. Crosshorde is a simple game that manages to instill a sense of real panic that few games manage even today. From the off, many independently moving targets to track and to start with, your movement and fire rate is slow, and it feels impossible to kill them all. However, as you progress, collect pickups, you start to move and fire faster, eventually start being able to get multiple arrows to fire at once. But as you will find out, the arrows run out, and whilst you're waiting for a refill, the horde approaches. Having no sound is a bit disappointing. Even simple blips would have worked, but it's not a showstopper for me. The only real complaint is starting each level resets all your upgrades. I agree with that. So the game feels slow and sluggish again. I would have preferred to keep the upgrades, but most of the enemies on the next level were also upgraded too. Honestly, not something I would play much again, but a good effort for a simple machine. 6 out of 10, the Brent. So there you go. Couple reviews on that one. I think they've got it right. I think we all are in agreement that you need to step up the speed on this, but otherwise there's a good game hidden in here. This is the exact opposite of the game, my game. My game requires you to be in danger all the time and be thinking continuously. This game, it's a leisurely romp down the realm of shooting stuff.
You have to remember, on other systems, this does play faster.
Yeah, oh yeah. As Z9K and I mentioned, I'm sure it does. I'm going to try this with a couple of the systems and see what I think. Any final thoughts on this one?
No, I think the technology is amazing, and I very much hope, and I know that he is continuing to develop it, and I very much look forward to where it will go.
You know, before we bail on the old comics here, the Brent, what do you think of this thing? Is this one we want to put back in the pile to have another go with, or do you think you've seen enough?
Well, everything ends back up into the Retro Rewind slot eventually.
No, so. Not everything. I can tell you that right now.
Everything but the...
not everything.
The, Action Max.
Did you enjoy your time on the old comics?
It was okay.
A ringing endorsement from King Dong. Let's move on. You know what it's time for. Let's get it out. It's time for the wheel of the Brent. Let's fire this sucker up. So, we've added a couple pieces this week. We've added Sega Master System games that were Brazil exclusives. Brazil exclusives, right? What do you think of that?
Interesting. That's a weird
one. Now, let's talk about it. You know what it is. It's our Retro Rewind piece brought to you by our good friend, Frank, at RetroRewind.ca. Brent, what do you think about the old boy at RetroRewind.ca?
Frank is a really nice guy. And it was incredible to get to work with him to get everything going. If you need anything for your C64 or Amiga hardware, be it kits, be it caps, be it anything like that, Retro Rewind, it's easy to navigate, it's fast to get to, and it's cheap as all get out. And if you use ARG10, it gets even cheaper, which is incredibly insane, because it's already as cheap as it could possibly get. So, when you have to get something kit-wise, absolutely the place to go.
You know, there's no more ringing endorsement than strategically putting the logo of the company on your chin and balanced on your gut as you walk over the... And he's gone. Let's spin this sucker. That's the kind of high-priced advertising you get on ARG. The old gut ad. Here we go. Gotta get out of this. Holy moly. And the winner is... Oh, no. This was the Retro Rewind piece, Bizarro Spin. It's Bizarro Spin. You know what that means, Brent. I'm going to spin this wheel again, and we have to pick each other's games. Are you ready?
Yes.
Here we go. Your excitement level is at an all-time high today. Here we go. We're going to pick each other's games on this next one. Bizarro Spin. And the winner is British Cartoon Games. This was a piece suggested by a good old friend, Captain Crispy. British Cartoon Games, Brent. So, you know what that means to Brent. That means next week, we will be picking each other's games, and they're going to be British Cartoon Games. Now, I know you're a big, massive fan of the old British cartoons, aren't you, Brent? What are your favorites? You don't know any, do you?
I know some by appearance. I don't know any by name.
Listen, I've watched a few of these British cartoons. I watched some Danger Mouse back in the day, for example. I know a few of these things. So I watch, I watch plenty of kids ones, you know, that the boy would watch. Who's the idiot? The pig? A Peppa Pig? I watch her. I know about her. So there you go. I watch Mr. Bean's cartoon. I wonder if that counts. So anyway, we're going to be picking each other's British cartoon. Now, do you want to set any ground rules on the system that these have to appear on, or just any system?
No, any system.
Okay, I'm going to find you a real humdinger, the Brent, and it's going to be good stuff. Now, before we go, I want to touch base. Let's rewind a little bit to last week when we covered Laserdisc games, and the Brent and me pulled out a couple winners, and one of the winners we pulled out for whatever reason, the review got deleted from Pajaco. So I want to go over these, and then I want to tell you what I did to poor Pajaco. So his review of Us versus Them, he writes, so as a game, I really didn't get on with it, and it was too hit or miss, and you die a lot. That's true. The B-movie side of it really saves it, but I think once you've tried Hammer through it in an afternoon and you don't go back, there are plenty of other Laserdisc games available. I pretty much agreed with everything both of you guys said, to be honest. The first Laserdisc game I ever remember seeing was Astron's Belt. That was very similar, actually. Now, here's where I kicked him and made him pay. I said, listen, Pajaco, you know, we didn't get any reviews for Brent's game. Why don't you go watch that since we're going to look at your stuff in reverse? He's like, okay. So he went and played I'm Your Man. This is Brent's game. He writes, ham acting! Exclamation point. Cheesy dialogue and an interactive game you have to play. Whilst there didn't seem to be any way to lose at the game that I could find, as you could in the Netflix Bandersnatch, that's the truth, it was still entertaining to play, and the fourth wall breaking just made it for me. A little bit Saved by the Bell action going on there. The online version is really good, as you can quickly skip video sections you've played before, meaning you won't find it playing a few times too tedious. Honestly, I would have loved to have gone and played through this sort of thing in the cinema. A playthrough only takes 20 minutes, and it works on mobile, Android at least. So it really does. So really do check this out. 8 out of 10. Here's the best part, Britt. P.S. I count this as a retro game, so I bought the DVD. You sold two of those things. He sold two of them. I can't believe it. So, Brent, you've single-handedly resurrected the I'm Your Man franchise from Oblivion. Congratulations on that. Now, enough of that. Thank you, by the way, Pajaco, for doing yeoman's work there. You know, Brent, November is here, and you know what that means. It's turkey time, brother, in the States anyway. It's Thanksgiving where we all get together and get a little fatter. But after that, that's when you pay the piper. Let's talk about it. November 26th, 2021, Brent. It'll all go down. It'll be Thanksgiving Marathon, Brent. ARG presents the Thanksgiving Marathon. Tell the people what to expect in this marathon. Well, also tell me while you're at it.
At 10 a.m. On the day after Thanksgiving, we will be playing 8 continuous hours of games, all kinds of good stuff, face-to-face. Aaron and I are agreeing to a ceasefire long enough to get together in person, and we are going to put out a little thing for everyone who has given to charity this year. Just a big old show to say thank you to everything that everyone's done.
That's right. And we just, you know, it's funny that me and the boat got a note from the charity folks we work with to tell us that we should do a show on Wednesday so we could get on the front page of Twitch because of our incredible charity deeds. And I told Bud, I said, listen, whether we get on the front page of Twitch or not that day, This was a lovely a kernel of fun that was provided for us by the many, many thoughtful and giving people that supported that event last summer, the Thanks for Giving Marathon. We appreciate everyone pitching in on that, including our sponsor, Frank, who gave quite a bit. I want to thank everybody who kicked in to help the kids. So this time around, like Brent said, we're not raising money. You don't have to send us a dime. All you got to do is kick back, relax, and let two idiots do what they do best, act stupid in front of a green screen. And that's what we're going to do, brother. We're going to be in the arcade. We're going to have everything cooking, and we're going to play 8 hours, continual hours of nonstop gaming action. Not going to be hullabaloo here, Brent. It's just going to be us going to work. Should be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it, my friend. Do we have anything else you need to get into, Brent, before we take this thing to the house? No.
Nope.
A man of few words. It finally happened. Well, I'll say a few words. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in this week. Another edition of ARG Presents. This was episode, I believe, 290 or 191, the Brent.
Yes.
That means we're nine short episodes for the big 200. Can you believe it, Brent? 200 episodes of ARG Presents. By God, we'll do something crazy when that day comes. Sometime in, I guess, January, I think, the Brent, is when that'll go down. So that should be a lot of fun. Maybe we'll get Boat to come over since he was involved in a couple dozen of those, too, and get something going. So that'll be fun. Something to look forward to in that month. But please, check us out and also check out our sponsor, RetroRewind.ca. Frank's a good guy. He will set you up for all your Commodore needs. We'll take it to the house. Next week, we'll be back with British cartoon games, and we'll have to pick each other's games. It should be wacky. Until next time, fly straight and true. Go!
Thanks for joining us today. We really hope you enjoyed the show. Special thank you to Duncan Styles for our vector style graphics and BartBit for our amazing music. Would you like to help keep ARG spinning? You can do so at patreon.com/ARGPresents. Just like these fine folks. Rollo, Olaf Hope, aw, Terry Howard, Gary Heather, John Schaller, the Solo Norris, Frodo NL, Chris Poles, Mitsuyama, Jason Warnes, Rob Black O'Hara, Andy Craig, Andy Jones, Kevin Bean, Pachaco 6502, Anthony Jarvis, Steve Rathmussen, Bernhard Lucas, Dave Velociraptor, Graham W. Vetke, Roushi, Mr. B, David Terrence, Super Tech Boy, Aram, Sundown, Texas Foosballer, Air Shack, Retroalgae, John Dykeman, Jerry Dennington, Z9K9, and Mario Ramey. They all have access to our Discord channel, and their names put and called out in the credits. Why don't you? If you have an idea for a wheel piece, you can email us at argpresents@mail.com. Be sure to visit our sponsor, RetroRewind.ca, and use promo code ARG10 to get 10% off your order. We film live every Sunday, 10 a.m. EDT. Hope to see you there.